This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
When bloggers or influencers post their outfit links, 9 times out of 10, I click on it and immediately exit because the price is bananas. It wasn't until recently that I clicked on something expecting it to be the usual out of my price range sweater, and it was under $60 at Quince. Quince has become my ultimate destination for luxury essentials that won't break the bank. Let me tell you about some of the gems I found at Quince. From their 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters starting at just $50 to their washable silk tops and dresses, organic cotton sweaters, and stunning 14 karat gold jewelry, Quince offers a range of high quality items at prices that are truly within reach. And here's the best part. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Give yourself the luxury you deserve with Quince. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks. Welcome to Shrink Chicks.
I'm Emily Beerley.
And I'm Jennifer Chaikin.
And we're licensed marriage and family therapists and owners of the Therapy Group.
We're on a mission to make therapy and therapeutic topics more relatable and accessible.
So stay tuned, because in order to grow yourself, you gotta know yourself. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Em.
Are you ready to talk about some intergenerational patterns and trauma?
Am I ever? That's an hilarious question. Are you ready to talk about intergenerational patterns and trauma?
Are you so excited?
I am amped up.
Okay. Here's why I like talking about intergenerational patterns. Because I think it allows you to really, if you're doing like work and like really empathetic, like understanding investigative journalism, we'll call it an abstract observing, you get to gain a lot of empathy for people in your life. And a lot of times therapists are like, oh, you just blame the parents. But like, we are in the business of understanding and empathizing with parents.
Yes.
People don't like that sometimes.
No. Well, I think that to see your parents as like human beings who also grew up in an environment where their parents were flawed human beings really does allow us to have a little bit more empathy towards them. But I almost think you sometimes have to go through the process of, you know, I guess not always, but like being upset or frustrated with your parents and then getting to that point where you can develop a little bit more empathy. It's almost part of the healing.
Well, I really think about my mother being my grandmother's daughter.
Yeah.
And how if she was my daughter, what I would have done differently.
Yeah.
When I think about like parenting my daughter, I think very much about like, what do I wish my own mother had and what do I wish I had?
Sometimes the thing that's really helpful for me in developing empathy towards my parents too is like thinking about them as children.
Yeah, that's
and
what I do.
What they experience. Yeah, like that can be really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And also in the generation that they grew up in, that there really wasn't a lot of space for them to do any of this work.
Oh, Jen, great intro to the first question.
Yep, did on purpose. Did that on purpose.
First question. Why does it feel like we're the first generation that is trying to break these patterns? So much work. We're not the first generation, but we're the first generation that's talking about it a lot. Generation that is talking about it a lot and has access to more information because of the internet and because of Instagram therapists and TikTok therapists and like all this stuff. We're not the first generation. Nothing is original. And I think that it is so normalized now and we're using different language, but you're right, consciously, very, very consciously doing it in mass. This is a larger mass thing in this generation.
Yes. And everyone's talking about it, right? That there's so much more acceptance around it. Whereas the generation before us, if they were going to therapy to talk about this, it was much more, there was much more shame around it. There was much more hiding. And so I think that there's so much more acceptance around doing this work. But yeah, it is a lot of work. You know, I think doing anything that's worthwhile is a lot of work.
It's a great way to put that.
You know, like it's true. I mean, like
it's all hard and horrible.
Things don't come easy. It is all hard. But I think that the reason why we choose to do hard things is because we know that there's a high reward at the end of it.
Yep. I'm going to let you choose one because now I think we can sort of start in any of these questions. Okay. So, okay, first, what is intergenerational patterns, right? So intergenerational patterns is patterns that are passed down through each generation, right? So like, let's talk about some really common ones. Unfortunately, addiction, big intergenerational pattern, secret keeping, really big. Addiction, abuse, also large, unfortunately. Difficulty maintaining boundaries, severe anxiety, specifically financial. Cut off is massively passed down.
We'll get into that a little bit. I think someone asked a question about that.
Those are all things that can be passed down through generations. And one of the things that, like, when we meet with clients for the first time, I say, tell me about your parents and then tell me about your grandparents. And I want to understand three generations up, right? If I can see three generations up, it's also easier for us to not blame people, for us to actually be relational in the way that we encounter one another with kindness and empathy. That's like sort of our quick overdraw.
You know, and something you can do if you're listening to this episode, if you want to understand this a little more, is you can Google genogram, right? Just Google genogram, see if you can make a genogram for yourself.
Yes. But the first time we ever tried to do that, Jen, one, we got high. Two, we said, this is way too hard. And now I'm like, I can make a genogram in my fucking sleep. No problem. But we were like, this is going to be an art. What did we think it was, a fucking art project? What was that decision?
Yeah,
we
used, I think we used different colors. We were like really putting a lot of work in it. I think we were making it an art project to maybe avoid the understanding of the patterns that were
going on, because we had to do with our own family first. Okay, that makes more sense. All right.
It's easier to turn it into a craft.
Yes. So a genogram is basically a much more extensive family tree that also has relationship dynamics involved in it, with boundaries, different things like that. So a really helpful tool to use. You can also ask your therapist if they have a genogram of you. That'll be fun. Oh, now all these therapists are going to have all these people that, like, oh, I listen to this podcast. And they said, you want to have a genogram? Can I see it? And those therapists are like, what the fuck? So
we apologize.
We apologize. Okay. So also, like, really helpful things. But to just think about, what was my parents' experience like as a child? What was my grandparents' experience like as a child? Also, it's important to understand what was historically going on during that time.
Yes.
Right? If you had family that's living through the Holocaust, the Great Depression, slavery, anything that's going on, right? Like, what is also like intergenerational trauma that gets passed down?
Yes.
Because there might not have been anxiety around money, and then your family lived through the Great Depression, and all of a sudden there's massive anxiety around money. Well, that makes complete sense based on what was happening. And so, like, that's another thing you want to keep in mind, is like also what was happening around the world at that time.
Right. Around the world. And then in your family too, specifically, right? If there are certain things, we've talked about this in sibling episodes, right? Where the reason why you might have siblings and the two of you grew up kind of in different families, because maybe something in your family, something was going on when you were younger and your sibling was older, that there are so many things that can be happening at that time that also shape your parents' ability to parent you and your grandparents' ability to parent your parents. And so that in and of itself also takes effect. And sometimes, I mean, I think even when we were building our own genograms, I think the suggestion was like, if there's anything you don't know, go back into your family, see if you can ask questions.
Yeah.
Right. See if you can really understand what was happening during that time. So that can be a really fun project.
If you're interested, right?
Yeah.
With my husband, right? Like in his family, they didn't talk about a lot of stuff. I get into the family and I never shut up. And all of a sudden I know like the full dating timeline of his parents and all this stuff about, you know, my father-in-law's first marriage. And I remember like after this dinner, I asked all these questions. Afterwards, my husband's like, I've never heard any of that. I had no idea. So if you don't ask questions, you're not going to know. People are interested in telling their story more than you realize.
You know, it's so interesting too. I mean, we mentioned, I think there's a lot around like family rules. So like you know, when you get married and you're in a different family and you don't know all the family rules, right, that have been passed down from generations, it's easy for you to bring your own rules, right? Your rules in your family are, we ask questions, we understand each other, right? So you're bringing your rules from your family into your partner's family, and you're kind of infiltrating it in a different way, and you're breaking that up. And I don't think that there's another question about this that we'll get into. Sometimes you don't realize what those rules are until you are, you know, you have brought someone into that family and they say like, well, why don't you guys do this? Or why do you do this? Why do you ask so many questions? Why are you so, you know, like if my husband's family is all together, we will sit down and like, there are so many silences that people are like very comfortable with.
And you're like, ugh.
I'm like, I'm just like coughing to like make noise because I'm like so uncomfortable. Because in my family, there is not a minute of silence.
There's so much anxiety.
There's so much anxiety around silence that people are just talking and talking and talking. But when I'm with my husband's family and everyone's quiet, I'm just like, I'm like clinking like silverware together to just like get some noise because I am so anxious. And so you realize that. I don't think I really realized that until I was with my partner and recognized how much anxiety I had in those situations and that we just have very different rules or ways of being at the dinner table. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we can get into some of that.
Well, so somebody wrote in, I noticed a lot of habits when moving in with my partner that I learned from my parents, and I'm sure there's more I haven't. How to recognize and improve on them. So the funny thing is like there's certain shit that's like just going to come out as it comes out. Like there's just like a natural progression of understanding ourselves and seeing stuff. And some stuff we can also say to our partner like, hey, like, how do you do this in your family? Right? Like, especially if there's something we continuously clash on or it's like really different. Those are like really important conversations to have to like get information.
Yes. 100%. And, you know, I think that that can be a great conversation to also be able to say like, can you, like, what do you see in my family that I'm not seeing? Right. I mean, I guess you have to be kind of prepped for that a little bit, like emotionally, you know, you have to be in a really good place. Right. Do you see anything in my family? Maybe your family does differently.
Well, also, if you're going to invite that conversation for someone else in your life, you got to be able to like hear truth.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be in a good place for that.
And you don't always love that.
Yeah. And so you have to be in a good place in your relationship to be able to do that. Right. Because I think so easily that can be pulled into your relationship in a way that is not helpful.
Yeah. And I guess like this person said, like how to recognize and improve on them. So improvement is like, am I able to be adaptive and flexible? Like, oh, here's this thing I learned from my childhood. It doesn't have to be about good or bad, but do I want to do it this way? It's one of the things that like, especially when we do premarital work, we really say to people, okay, tell me like three things you really want to take from your family origin and three things you really want to leave. We're not here to say what's good or bad. We're not here to like shit on anyone. But it's just like, hey, like these tools are like not necessarily helpful anymore.
And I think that gives us the opportunity to say, what are the things that I do want to take with me? And also the opportunity to first understand that you don't have to take everything with you and you get to make changes. Where I think when we grow up in an environment, things are just happening so naturally. We don't realize that we have these choices, that we can make changes. So I think the first kind of piece to this is just understanding that you have choices in this. You can make changes. You can recognize when your anxiety is coming up that no one's talking at the dinner table. And what do you want to do with that? Do you want to talk over everyone to help manage your anxiety? Or do you want to say, okay, this is making me anxious. Can I sit with this silence? Can I be okay with this? Where is this coming from for me? Being self-reflective in those moments when you're in an environment that's a little bit different than how you grew up.
If you listen to one of our latest episodes titled Em and Jen Fall Apart, you know the current feelings of burnout that we're both facing. Running our business, the therapy group, keeping up with the podcast, and enduring a house renovation leaves little time for grocery shopping, meal prepping, and cooking. So we are extremely thankful for our sponsor, Hungry Root. When I received my first delivery of the Hungry Root box, it felt like a breath of fresh air. Hungry Root saves me so much time and offers customizable options. Plus, with perfectly portioned ingredients, I'm wasting far less food than I would if I were left to my own devices in the kitchen. No more throwing away wilted veggies or expired condiments lurking in the back of my fridge. Each order is fully customizable, so you can take their suggestions or choose anything you want. They've got fresh produce, high quality meat and seafood, smoothies, sweets, ready to eat meals, kids snacks and meals, vitamins and supplements, and much more. I discovered Three Little Pigs, spinach, feta, and egg bites in my last delivery, and they are my new obsession. Also, Hungry Root's coconut curry sauce is not to be missed. Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's got to taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Shrink Chicks listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/shrinkchicks. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Anyone else feel like a business class required in your schooling curriculum would have been massively helpful? Because same. We went to school to become therapists, and here we are 10 years later, really noticing the void in our knowledge on the business side of therapy, which is why we love our Masterclass membership. Masterclass has truly increased our confidence in running our therapy practice, The Therapy Group. Pros like Chris Voss, Robin Roberts, Daniel Pink, and Mark Cuban have filled that void and taught us so much about decision-making, negotiating, maximizing our time, and effective communication. This year, you too can learn from the best to become your best with Masterclass. Don't just talk about improving. Masterclass actually helps you do it. Plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk. And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/shrinkchicks. masterclass.com/shrinkchicks.
Jen, here's a question for you.
I'm ready.
The anxiety my mom passed to me.
I knew that was the one you were going to say.
And her parents passed to her, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. How to not pass it on to my kids as a naturally anxious person.
Yes. So this.
You will.
You will. But I think first, let me say the fact that you're asking this question is the important thing. You are aware of the intergenerational patterns of anxiety, right? You notice when those things come up. So I think the self-reflection is really, really essential. So something, I think a really good question to ask yourself is like, when specifically is the anxiety coming up for me that has been passed down generations? I'll give you an example in my family. So growing up, my mom had a ton of anxiety around driving, a ton. If we were late specifically for something, there was a lot of anxiety around getting there on time. I noticed that her mother is very much the same. She has a lot of anxiety around driving. So when I was in college, really struggling with in my relationship, really struggling with myself, I used to have a complete anxiety panic attack when I was driving and I was late for something. And so at the time, right, I was so focused on the anxiety and the fact that, oh, there must be something, you know, like there was a lot of shame around it, a lot of struggle with it. Over the work that I have done in becoming a therapist and being in therapy, I've recognized that there has been a lot of anxiety that has been passed down specifically surrounding driving. And that has come out so many times. So really the understanding of where my anxiety is coming out, where it has come from, and starting to do the work that maybe my mom was unable to do and my grandmother was unable to do. What's the fear here? Is the fear real? Like, I'm going to be late. So what if I am late for this? What's going to happen? Right? What's the worst case scenario? Because I would go right into, oh my God, I'm going to be late. I'm going to be late for this. I'm not going to be able to make the train. I'm not going to make, right? I stay on the top level of anxiety as opposed to, well, what's going on for me right now, right? Is it how will I work through this if I am late? How can I self-regulate when I am in the car? What are the things that are triggering my anxiety? Another example is being stuck in traffic, right? Being stuck anywhere, right? So when you're stuck in traffic, you have the sense of I have no control over the situation. That can be very anxiety provoking. And so your ability to first recognize when that anxiety has come up for you, how much of that has been passed down generations, and starting to help yourself work through some of that anxiety that maybe your parents, your parent or your grandparent was unable to work through.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good answer.
And it's also, I also just want to validate that this is very common. I know that there's this, I have natural anxiety, right? That there's ways to work through it. There's also medication.
And if you need it, that is really okay.
I also want to just validate the fact that medication can also be very, very helpful mm-hmm. if some of the tools that you're working on in therapy aren't working.
Yeah.
That can be a phenomenal supplement.
Yeah. How to not hold anger toward a parent for repeating a horrible pattern.
Mm.
I think this is when it's really important to see our parents as children.
Yeah.
To really see what it must have been like to be a child in their home. And what behaviors they adapted to survive that. And adaptive adults are not bad in so many ways. They're superheroes. They get us there and they're so wonderful and they help us survive. And so what we don't realize is how much that they did do to be different or how much they really tried. I hear this a lot, especially from when alcohol and addiction is part of the pattern. Well, if you grew up with a parent of addiction, why would you not have get that fixed? And you're also saying like, but that's like saying for some people, like, well, then why didn't you make the sky pink? You know, like that people often try their very, very hardest, yeah. Right? How many of them were kids that said, I'm never going to be like my parents? It's also one of the things that was huge towards my relationship with my parents by becoming a parent, where I was like, holy fuck, man, this is so hard. You didn't sleep for 3 years? No shit. You're fucking crazy. I mean,
100%.
I get it all now, right? Like, I don't get all of it, but there's stuff, right? That like I can sit here and understand. I think like for my family, that was like really passed down dieting and relationship with food. And like, yeah, like no shit, my mom wasn't able to break it before I was a kid. Like if you think about the freaking 90s snack wells and 100 calorie packs and like, what chance did she have, right? Like
Nutrisystems,
right? You know, what chance did like any of us have with this? So, like, I also like to think about like in a larger picture of like what society is like throwing at us all the time to keep us trapped in these patterns.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, like, okay, well, you're upset with your family for having alcohol, but like how normalized is alcohol addiction and alcohol drinking like in our life?
Yes.
So people, I like to believe that people really try really fucking hard, and it's totally valid for you to be pissed at someone. I get it. Mm-hmm. I would also be pissed too, right? But there's a difference between having anger towards someone and being anger, embodying anger, right? Like integrating it into like, I can't ever be around this person or have a relationship with them. I let it take over.
Right.
So what would it be like to have anger and to have empathy? Would it be like to have anger and to have boundaries? Would it be like to have anger and to have growth?
Love. That's beautiful.
Because I can't sit here and say you're never going to hold anger towards a parent for repeating a horrible pattern. Maybe there's a lot of majesty in the anger that you hold. Yeah. And what does it do for you now?
And what can you do with it? I love that. So I think, yeah, there's the sense of like, I don't want to be angry. I don't want to feel this way. I don't want to, right? Like, how do you work through the anger and then make, and work through is in terms of like, how do you understand it? And then you get to decide what you want to do with that as opposed to reacting to it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, what do I want to do with this anger?
Yeah.
How do I want to work through this?
Mm-hmm. Do you think divorce is an intergenerational pattern? And what about cheating?
Sometimes.
Yeah, they can be. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I think sometimes, yeah. But I also want to say, like, I think that sometimes people ask that question as, like, fear-based, right? Like, oh, if I'm about to marry someone who their parents are divorced and they got divorced because their dad cheated or their grandparents cheated, you know, that there's a lot of fear around that. I think it can be. It doesn't have to be, right? That if people are seeing the way, it's similarly to cutoff, right? If people are seeing the way in which you handle struggles in relationship is you're just like, okay, we're done. We're not going to, you know, I'm not going to work on my own, whatever I'm struggling with. And my partner's not going to work on their own stuff, whatever they're struggling with, and go to therapy, that you can see that and say, oh, that's definitely what's going to happen then. If it's a pattern, it's definitely going to get passed down into my relationship, where that's not always the case, but it can be a pattern, right? If that's what you see and you see that they worked through it, right? Like that they got divorced and actually things ended up being okay, right? That like divorce is more normalized.
I think there's this part also that people might hate that I say this, but the reality is that divorce and cheating is part of our culture.
Yeah.
And they also don't have to be the end of anything. Sometimes divorce is a really healthy thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes cheating in a relationship makes a relationship fucking so much better. I'm not saying that it's not painful and it's not horrible, but I'm just saying once you've done the job that we do and you work through people that are so happy after a divorce or had a horrible situation with infidelity and now their marriage is fucking amazing, you don't see these things as so horrific in black and white anymore. You just see them as parts of our culture that are part of stuff. So is it possible to be passed down for us things to be modeled? Of course. But what are we going to do with it?
Yeah.
So let's say that's true. Let's say that happens. Let's say that my my partner's father cheated and they end up cheating on me. Is that 100% a deal breaker for me?
Right.
Lots of people stay in marriages where there's been infidelity. I'm not sitting here saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just saying we got to have some critical thinking about how hard it is. People have never been married for as long as this generation's being married, because people are still getting married in their late 20s and 30s and still living to fucking 100.
Yeah. It's wild.
So people were married for 70 years before, right? So like, it's not this like beautiful, delicate thing. Yeah. It's just very real. And I also think for so many of us, especially millennials who grew up with this like 50% divorce rate, which like, guys, just so you know, like, it's not accurate anymore. Like, it hasn't been accurate for actually years, the 50% divorce rate. Like, stop saying that. But I think a lot of our generation that had a lot of harm from parents divorced, you see them come in, they're like, I never ever want to be divorced. And that's great. But what if you really needed to get out? What if something was bad?
Yeah.
You're going to stay just for kids just because you told yourself you never would?
Right.
You don't have to be, you don't have to always be the bigger person. You don't have to be like, you don't need to prove your parents so wrong that you hurt yourself in the process.
Because also that's reactionary, right? Because we talk about a lot with patterns too, right? Where you so badly don't want to be like your parent that you swing so far in the other direction that might also not be helpful for you. So the goal is less so to for you to act based on a reaction to what your parents did, because that represents something that is still unhealed, right? That there's still healing that needs to be done. More so that you're making a decision for yourself that makes sense in that moment, or for your kids, or for your family, that makes sense, not based on what your parents have done. And so I think that's such an important thing that you said, Em, is that to be able to, you know, to say like, oh, my parents got divorced, so I will never get divorced, is more reactionary as opposed to, does that actually make sense for the relationship that I'm in?
Yeah.
Because we hear all the time, it's true, we do hear all the time, oh, this person's getting divorced. And our response to that is like, okay, divorce isn't always a terrible thing, right? Like that sometimes it can be really helpful for two people to get out of a relationship that is not serving them.
I mean, Jen, I'm sure that you've had this. Tell me this. I have had people in my office or store that said, I wish my parents got divorced. I wish I didn't live in a high conflict home. I wish that, you know what I mean? Like, I wish that they just ended it, right? So like, for us to say there's like better or worse, like, yes, there's outcomes to divorce. Of course, we're not going to sit here and like dispute data.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, like, some of our thinking around all this has got to be more nuanced, because I have also watched couples where there has been some type of infidelity have the world's best relationships I've ever seen.
Me too.
Right? I am not going to sit here and like pass judgment on shit.
I have seen it completely transform relationships, because it highlights, then they have to talk about the things that were not working in their first relationship with each other, right? They have to develop a whole new relationship, and you see some really beautiful things come out of something that is so painful.
And I've seen couples where cheating absolutely destroys their marriage and their children and hurts everyone, right? So it's just not, we can't talk about these things and these things. But so yeah, the question was, is it individual? Yes, it can be. I don't know. So did we go off there? Okay.
Just a bit.
It's a bit of a soapbox. All right.
Can you believe we're on year 5 of Shrink Chicks? We have been podcasting since 2019 and have somehow yet to change the photo of us on the cover of the podcast. We are planning a photo shoot in a few weeks so we can finally update our cover art. We both obviously need new outfits for the photo shoot, but really didn't want to break the bank. So thank goodness for Quince, where we can get multiple high-quality outfits for a very reasonable price. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. For the shoot, we want to go with a few different looks, one being monochrome, so I opted for a few key items from Quince's collection, including their Mongolian cashmere tee, classic trouser pant, and structured blazer. I couldn't resist adding their timeless 14 karat gold jewelry pieces to complete my look, because who doesn't love accessorizing? The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. Plus, Quince only works with factories that
that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, making me feel even better about my purchases. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/shrinkchicks for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/shrinkchicks to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/shrinkchicks. Anyone else go through soap and cleaning products insanely quick? At both my house and at our business, we're constantly replacing plastic bottles. Did you know that an estimated 5 billion plastic hand soap and cleaning bottles are thrown away each year? And if that's not bad enough, most cleaning formulas are 90% water, which is heavy to ship, leading to excessive carbon emissions. That's why we are thrilled to introduce our newest sponsor, Blueland. Blueland is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and the planet with the same powerful clean you're used to. The idea is simple. They offer refillable cleaning products with a beautifully cohesive design that looks great on your counter. Fill your reusable bottles with water, drop in the tablets, and wait for them to dissolve. You will never have to grab bulky cleaning supplies on your grocery run. Refills start at just $2.25. You can even set up a subscription or buy in bulk for an additional savings. From cleaning sprays to hand soap, toilet bowl cleaner, and laundry tablets, all Blueland products are made with clean ingredients you can feel good about. And I'll be honest, I was a bit skeptical at first. Can eco-friendly products really tackle tough messes? Well, Blueland proved me wrong. The products I received, like their multi-service cleaner and bathroom cleaner, were powerful. Grime, grease, and dirt don't stand a chance. Blueland is not only good for the planet, but also for your wallet. And the starter kit I received was beautifully packed. The bottles are sleek and sturdy, and the scents are amazing. Lemongrass, lavender eucalyptus, and fresh lemon, or you can choose fragrance-free. Blueland has a special offer for listeners. Right now, get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/shrinkchicks. You won't want to miss this. blueland.com/shrinkchicks for 15% off. That's blueland.com/shrinkchicks to get 15% off.
Let's talk about cut off awful adult mom-daughter relationships. I'm in no contact with my mom. Mom is in no contact with my grandma, etc. Cut off is absolutely transmitted intergenerationally. If it's modeled for us, let's talk about modeling.
Modeling, absolutely. Because I think that if you think about cutoff, right, cutoff happens as, once again, I know I'm talking a lot about reactivity, but as a reaction to something. That if the rules in your family is if you are struggling in a relationship, that you don't talk about it, you don't communicate through it, you don't feel these uncomfortable feelings in order to get to a different place, then we just cut each other off. We don't talk to each other, right? If that is a rule that has been passed down, then it's likely you are going to hold that to be true and continue to hold that to be true unless you work through the reasons why you're holding that. Right? Or like what comes up for you when there's discomfort in a relationship is your immediate response to this. Well, I'm not going to be friends with that person anymore. Right? Like how much is cut off happening in your familial relationships and in your friendships or your romantic relationships? How much does cut off happen? Even if it's in small moments, right? Where you're like, well, you did this to me. And so I'm not going to talk to you for the rest of the day. Even those like small emotional cutoffs that happen, how much is that happening? And what emotion are you turning away from, right? What are you feeling in those moments that you're not, or what are you not allowing yourself to feel by saying, I'm going to cut you off right now? What is the emotion that is too difficult, too painful, or you have learned that you are not supposed to feel?
Mm-hmm. Here's an interesting one. I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Okay.
Health anxiety. I grew up watching my dad freak out about every abnormality. Now I freak out over every abnormality. Help.
You know what I also wanted to bring up? Like nature nurture, right? There's a lot of nature nurture stuff in this is that you're watching you are watching your parent have a lot of worries over their own health. Right. And so as a child, you are a sponge. You very much pick up on emotion. You pick up on what's going on around you. And so in a lot of ways, your brain is wired to hear, like while your brain is developing as a child, your brain is starting to create wires around, okay, your dad is fearful of his health, right? And so what he's doing, he's going to the doctor, he's doing this, right? So while your brain is developing, you are watching these connections happen with a parent who is your kind of safe space, right? The person who's protecting you, taking care of you. So you're creating these wires in your brain that are saying, it is protective, it is taking care of me, by making sure that like all of my health is taken care of, or that I have some sort of abnormality, I have to make sure that's okay. There's a lot of anxiety around it because that is the time in which your brain was forming and you were forming those connections. And so first acknowledging that, right? That like those wires were formed at the time. But your brain is plastic. You can make the changes to your brain. Your brain is malleable. And so being able to ask yourself every time there is an abnormality, right, to say like, what's coming up for me right now, to almost become more mindful in those moments of like, what is this bringing up for me? Is every time I get this checked out, does it end up being something, right? Start to do a little bit of reality testing in there, because your brain has very much formed these wires over time. And I want you to ask yourself, is this serving me, right? Is the reaction to this still serving me? The anxiety might still come up, but is the reaction that I am jumping to, is it serving me? Is it actually helping me? Because I wonder if that also, it's being reinforced for you to say, I'm having this abnormality, I have anxiety about it, so I'm going to go to the doctor every single time, right? Because I'm going to the doctor, that means that this is something that is serious. This is something, the anxiety is true. This is going to affect me. This is going to hurt me. So my question is that reaction to it actually helping you? Do you want to implement different types, different ways of self-soothing that maybe your father was unable to implement when he was struggling with his own anxiety around his health?
Okay, you ready for Dear Imogen?
Yes, I'm so ready.
Okay, Dear Imogen. I have a narcissistic alcoholic father who cheated on my mom my whole life. His father was also a narcissistic and alcoholic who cheated on his wife. I am now watching my brothers follow in the same footsteps. My question is, why do some children go down the same dark paths even though they've seen the negative effects it can have on a family, while other children like me want to go the opposite? Well, there's probably a reason you're listening to this podcast and your brothers aren't. You're asking, right? So consciousness.
Yeah.
Consciousness.
That's such a big question.
It's such a big question. Why? We don't have data. Yeah. But what we can make assumptions is then we have some people that really consciously, intentionally are trying to do it different. And then we have other people. Often, and it makes a lot, I'm wondering if there's also something to, I don't know if this person's female that wrote in, they said my brothers, I'm not sure, but I also wonder if there can be something about how society puts things onto men and how things have to be so shoved down and neglected emotionally and they don't have space to do this.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that's like, you know, for them to have tried to do that and what type of shame they already have. If there's parts about like, I'm fucked anyway, so might as well go for it. Because that's what I see is the self-sabotage.
Yeah.
I can't get out of this. It doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
And what would it be like to invite those conversations? I see you going down this path as dad. I love you and I care for you. Can I support you in any way? Do you want to talk about this? Do you see any of that? You know, sometimes people don't want to hear it, but sometimes people are waiting for someone to ask.
Just dying for someone to ask, right? Like if with a narcissistic alcoholic father, my guess is there wasn't a lot of space for vulnerability. There wasn't a lot of space for your emotions, right? If society already for men is saying you can't be vulnerable, you have to be strong, you have to suck it up, you have to be a man, that it's just the messaging around that is so much stronger. And once again, I know we're making assumptions, but for women, there's so much more space to be able to be vulnerable in society with our friendships, right? Where if you're not getting that growing up, sometimes there's other supports that you can develop. So yeah, that can be really, really hard. And I think that we can develop supports outside of our family. We can, you know, we can start listening to podcasts. We can go to therapy. We can talk to our friends. That sometimes when we have more support outside of our family, it can help us go in different directions too.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, right? Because I can sit here and talk about, I just keep thinking about, you know, even when we talk about, I mean, I was going to therapists. Jen, I don't feel like in our experience, in our training, there was specific training around male depression.
No.
Or working with men.
No.
And I do think that a lot of therapists are not, I know we're making this very gender, but there is something to this. A lot of therapists are not properly trained to assess male depression and to understand it and to work with men. And the reality is it's a majority female job.
Yeah. And the reality is that male depression presents very differently, right? That it can come out as anger. It just can come out in so many different ways. And so we really love Terry Real's book on this.
I don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. Thank you.
Well, I wasn't saying that to you. That was the name of the book.
Yeah. I couldn't remember it. So I'm so glad you said it. I don't want to talk about it.
I'm not shutting you down. That's the name of the book.
Right, I get it. I know. Just be like, okay, yes. I guess we won't talk about it. It's called I Don't Want to Talk About It, but it's really, really helpful in understanding. Actually, we are going to do an episode at some point. Don't know when. Time will tell on when you have a partner who is struggling with mental health.
Yes. But I guess same thing with a family member.
With a family member, exactly. And so sometimes that can feel very out of our control. We can really struggle with that. But just understanding kind of the different ways that society might play into that too, and how that can make it a little bit more challenging in terms of allowing men to be vulnerable.
Here's what I would say to this person, though. You're writing in, and I want to say, like, I'm also really sorry you're witnessing this, because it also must be triggering for you, and you must want to shake them and say, stop, stop, stop. And sometimes we watch our families go down very similar patterns and we think, how? But once again, we can experience the same trauma as our siblings and not always the same wounds, right? Wow. We've talked about this before, that you can sit through an accident and everyone walks out with different wounds. And your wound was like, I'm going to fucking never go through this again. I will never do this to children. I will never do this. And sometimes that's not it for everyone.
Yeah. Sometimes it's a recreation of it when it's under their control,
yeah.
Right? That's the way in which they are managing their wounds around it, which doesn't necessarily mean it's healthy, but it very much happens in humans when it's unhealed.
Yeah. So to all of you wonderful listeners who are doing some great fucking work, tuning in, going to your own therapy, reading your own books, doing your own self-reflection, today in this moment, we will honor you. And we hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can always rate, review, subscribe, follow on Apple Podcasts if you're looking to do a little bit of deeper work and you are located in the states of Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Florida, or California.
And in person, in Westchester and in Philadelphia, our beautiful new Philadelphia location.
We would love you to come on out and see if we can find you a good match with one of our clinicians. And let's give like a quick spotlight to like how awesome our interns are right now. If you're located in Pennsylvania and you need a little bit of a lower fee option, we have the world's best interns right now. So we recommend reaching on out. They can do in-person in Westchester, Philadelphia, or virtual anywhere in Pennsylvania. Thanks for listening to today's episode. We think you're badass. We hope you like us too. And don't forget that if you want to grow yourself, you got to know yourself. We'll see you next week.
Thanks so much.